Hello, thank you for joining us for this bi-weekly transmission of the Alchemy of Light broadcast. This is a celebration and exploration of consciousness. The show integrates the available progressive social and natural science-based genius alongside the more intimate genius of individuals sharing their stories. And today I have brilliant guests of both rich stories personally and with a tremendous scientific wealth of information to offer us, Lee Bauman, T. Lee Bauman, who is himself a medical doctor turned lecturer, author, and is currently a consultant. And he will tell us, actually, of the many magical things that he is involved with. He is here today to share with us about his book, his newest release, Mind to Matter to Consciousness. And it is revealing the medical and scientific advances that support the connection of human consciousness and awareness. And I will, without further ado, please welcome Mr. Bauman.
Well, Jamil, hi, thank you so much for having me on your program.
A pleasure. A pleasure. Perhaps we could start with, would you please tell us a little bit about your background? You are the author of several books, God at the Speed of Light, The Melding of Science and Spirituality, followed by Window to God, and The Akashic Light, Religion's Common Thread, The Siegel Project, and Mind to Matter to Consciousness, The Anatomy of the ELF. I wonder if you could give us a brief summary of how these came about and the thread of your passion in pursuing this interest.
I'd be happy to, Jamil, and thank you for asking. My history is that I was raised as a Christian. I became an atheist during my pre-medical training, and then I went into medical school, where I got my medical degree as a physician. By that time, I was basically an atheist. I have always been and still am a believer in science, that it's science or nothing for me. So when I was in pre-medicine and then my medical training, everything really had, up to that point, was pointing to the fact that there was no need for a higher power in the universe. So I went along with that. Between Darwin's theory of evolution and science backing the Big Bang theory, they basically excluded the need for God. What happened, though, in the mid-1970s, as I was entering the actual practice of medicine, I became interested in Raymond Moody's first classic book on the near-death experience. It was called Life After Life. Many of us are familiar with it. It was really the landmark book on the near-death experience. As a physician, I found it had a lot to offer. It was basically a medical study into the phenomenon of near-death. It was something I had always questioned as a physician. At that time, I had resuscitated many, many patients and had often questioned what exactly was going on. I had had several interesting encounters during my medical practice, one of which included some poor elderly gentleman who I had actually pronounced dead, only to be called back to the floor about half an hour later to be told by the nursing staff that this gentleman was now alert, awake, and, you know, functioning, and I just couldn't believe it. So at that point in time, I realized that there was a lot going on with the human body and mind that we could not always explain. At about that time, I also became interested in Einstein and especially his special theory of relativity. With the special theory of relativity, science basically states, and has proven many times over, that for the light wave, time does not exist. And at least at this point in time, I won't go into all the details, but I always found that a bit special and supernatural, because if you're a light wave and time does not exist, you can basically travel the universe over and your clock never moves. And for the photon or the light wave, it has been appreciated that light is basically everywhere in the universe at once. Some people have even gone so far as to state that there's only one light wave in the entire universe, and it's everywhere, and I don't know if I agree with that, but that just exemplifies the crazy notions that are assumed to go along with many of the attributes of physical light. They're just things that are very difficult for us humans to understand, because they do seem to exist outside of time and space. We even have Nobel Prize winners that state, you know, the attributes assigned to physical light are impossible. That was Richard Feynman. We have Niels Bohr stating that those who are not shocked when they first come across quantum mechanics could not possibly have understood it, because it's just so crazy. It's just so difficult to believe. So in a nutshell, that was how I got interested in a lot of these supernatural aspects of quantum mechanics and religion, spirituality, so to speak, and also the near-death experience, all of which utilize and are connected by the central theme of light, and hence my first book, which basically changed my life.
I am very, very intrigued by your path of discovery. I'm particularly fascinated by the skeptics that hold true to their love of physicality, if you will, and demand that science live up to their need and their evolution of what they need to understand. And I think that is really the thrust of what makes good science in general. Because we're all learning and growing and expanding, and if we all just accepted all the answers as they are, then we would never grow.
That is so true. I mean, I pinch myself, Jamil. I pinch myself every morning when I wake up, because I cannot believe that such a man of science that has always lived basically and breathed science is now a believer in God because of science. It's just incredulous to me.
Well, this is actually a whole conversation all by itself, and it's beautiful, actually, because it's interesting how the study of science and your pursuit of healing killed your interest in God, in a matter of speaking, only to be revived by bigger things that actually made room for the mystery to be, if you will, and brought you back in using science to perhaps, I want to suggest, more balanced perspective in understanding that we are learning, basically. And can you, I'm very interested in the, so not to go off point, because I really want to share with the listeners the new book that you have written, Matter to Mind to Consciousness, because I can tell we could talk for a long time about
that. We really could.
Oh, my goodness. This, just right there is a show all by itself. and it's a good one. It's so relevant, because we are at a time when science itself is changing, and I feel like people like yourself who have initiated the studies in their own independent, loving pursuits are the groundswell of consciousness that is now forcing the consciousness to rise. It's not because the powers that be have decided that you know, humanity is ready. We have two things going on here. We have the emergence of our birthright, literally, and to know this is information that it pertains to who we are in the divine cosmos. This is our right to know this, and how it's not been taught us is also part of our challenge right now. So we have, I feel like we have both going on, and people like you are part of the forefront that is bringing this tremendous knowledge to us, and science itself must adapt now to a multidimensional model. That's my personal vote, that we are multidimensional beings, that as we explore your book and the anatomy of the, you know, ELF, the extremely low, or the extremely low frequencies.
Right, extremely low frequencies.
Yeah, then we are admitting that we are not our bodies, right?
That is exactly right.
So that is a very interesting starting point then. That's very different than the ape, you know? It's, well, then what are we? So I love this science. I am so excited about the work that you and so many of your colleagues are bringing to us. So
You are very kind.
Yeah, and your book is very easy to understand. It and you're very honest when you get to parts where, you know, science hasn't yet met your needs. You say it when you say you let us all know really straightforward what you understand and what you don't and where we're still working. And I really appreciated the accessibility of this book and the information, because me, as an intuitive learner, I'm coming to this awakening in myself where I'm finally feeling welcome in science because of work like this.
Yeah.
You know, if science is going to be available to the masses, somebody's got to tell it to us in a way we can understand. We're not stupid, you know. So this is a really good book for anybody pursuing higher consciousness at all. I can't recommend this enough. It's a very good get yourself going, and the questions that it leads to is fantastic.
Well, thank you. I'll have to admit, I was actually quite shocked. I mean, having written my previous books where I talk about how physical light is omnipresent and omniscient or all-knowing, I talk about how the near-death experience, those who are on the other side feel at the time they have all the answers to the universe. And then when I read just several years ago that the scientific advances had shown that our brains actually emit radio waves, and I'm not talking about through the electroencephalogram or the little squiggles that we're so used to seeing for seizure patients, but that our brains actually emit those same waves into outer space. It was just, you know, really enlightening to me. I found it hard to believe that as a physician, I had never read about this type of research. I can understand where my physician colleagues would probably like to keep that information under wraps, because we tend to think of that type of notion as crazy. So it was quite interesting to me and appealing to the fact that, again, we find physical light, which physicists identify as any type of electromagnetic radiation, as being the medium through which this knowledge is distributed throughout the universe. So we have our brains giving off these waves. We have these phenomenon, which are scientifically based, for instance, the Schumann resonances, which is a known phenomenon between the Earth and the ionosphere, which is one of the atmospheric layers above the Earth, that these type of extremely low frequencies from our brains are able to go into this area between the Earth and the ionosphere and become amplified, and they're able to exist within this space-time continuum for a prolonged period of time, which makes them eligible to be received by other humans, which allows and explains how, as humans, we are just as able to receive similar brain waves from other living individuals, possibly even from God, him or herself, and even deceased spirits, as the near-death experiencers had So we, even though we may not have the exact answers, we have explanations. We have potential explanations for so much of the paranormality that we've witnessed as humans and not understood, which so many people have dismissed as just crazy talk. And now we have physicians and scientists and reputable, credible authorities lending credence to these type of phenomena. So it's really quite, it's very powerful.
It really is. It's a fascinating time to be alive. I would like you to, if you could walk us through the basic steps of how this works, that basically kind of follows the model in your book. Can you share with the listeners a little bit about our brain and the neuronal structure and the way that the body communicates throughout with the neuronal structure and this, and explain synapses a little bit? And I love this theory that the neurons that seem to go nowhere as the antenna that connects us. Could you run us through that and explain that to the listeners? What is this science? Now, tell me the dirt, you know?
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I mean, it's so mystic, really. As a medical student and then going through residency, you're always taught that the brain is full of about 100 billion neurons or nerve cells, that we have about 100 trillion synapses. So that gives you an idea of how many arms each of these neurons give off, which are called dendrites. And each of these extensions from the nerve cells can connect to a whole multitude of other nerve cells. So it really, it's like a tree. It's the picture of a tree being a single nerve cell. And each branch can then tie into another nerve cell, and it just goes on and on. And actually, a tree is an excellent representation of some of the nerve cells in our brains, which can have thousands of extensions. Each extension ends in something called a synapse. And the synapse is where one nerve cell connects to another nerve cell. So that's basically what a synapse is. You have...
where they connect is what makes the synapse.
Exactly. And what we understand, at least in medical school, is that you've got these neurons which, when it runs up against a synapse, a neurotransmitter is produced, which immediately crosses the synapse and relays the signal to another nerve cell. And so that's how our nerve signals are spread.
All through synapses in the connection.
Exactly. Exactly. So you've got chemicals that communicate one nerve cell to another nerve cell. Now, within each single nerve cell, the signal can travel actually feet or meters, because if you look at a nerve cell that starts at your toe, at the tip of your toe, and goes all the way up to your spinal cord, that could well be 4 or 5 feet in length, and that's just a single nerve cell.
So we have nerve cells in our whole body, not just our brains.
Exactly.
Is this tree of nerves then throughout our whole body? Is that part of the whole entire body structure, the nerve cells that run throughout?
It really is. If you look at a nerve cell that, say you touch your big toe, and you have a nerve cell which triggers that signal from your big toe, it goes up to your spinal cord, and so you've got like a 4 or 5 foot length nerve cell. It ends within the spinal cord and is relayed through several synapses, which then travel up several other nerve cells up into your brain. And the signal then, whether it be chemical via the synapse or whether it be basically electrical potentials within the nerve cell proper, these signals are eventually relayed to the brain. And at the very surface layer of the brain, we know that most of the nerve cells appear just to end blindly. Now, if you talk to most neurologists or most neurosurgeons, they're going to tell you, oh, no, 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 that's not the case. These nerve cells attach to plenty of other nerve cells, and they go on, and they're recycled through other areas of the brain, and it allows our brain to function in the way it does. But yet, if you pin them down, even when you get to the level of electron microscopy, where you're looking at almost molecules and the atomic structure at the end of these nerves, we know that we cannot identify every connection of every nerve cell in the brain. Now, if every nerve cell does continue on and connect with other nerve cells, one, it's almost impossible to define that and to visualize that through any technology that we currently have. And two, if you look at almost any medical text that is currently on the market, all of those medical texts show these nerve cells, which begin at the area of the toe or the finger and go all the way to the surface of the brain, it shows these nerve cells as just ending.
So every single part of the body has a nerve that starts somewhere in the body, travels up through the body, through the spinal cord, and into the brain, and then goes somewhere.
Yes, exactly. I could not have said it better myself. It goes somewhere, but we don't know where. It could be that they blindly end, which appears to be the case. But again, I use a caveat to say that our technology is not at the point where we're able to identify if indeed they do continue on and connect with other nerve cells, which we know at least in some micron slides that we're able to look at, we know they do connect with other nerve cells, but then so many of the synapses do not. At least we're not able to identify. I conjecture is that perhaps indeed they do not connect with any other nerve cells. Are trying to look for continuations of these nerves with other nerve cells is a futile task because they do end blindly, and perhaps they are servicing or acting basically as antennas, and antennas not only to give off our brain waves, which we know now that they do give off basically radio signals, but that they can also receive radio signals. So that's one of the hypotheses in my book, above and beyond the fact that our brains actually are known to give off radio waves.
Can you clarify for us? I noticed there were mentioned several different kinds of waves, and also I find the correlation in the synapse itself being part chemical and part electrical.
Yes.
And these waves, the difference between an electrical wave, an electrical magnetic wave, they all have an electrical component. Even the synapse themselves have an electrical component. Is that true?
Well, if you look in most of the medical texts, when you get to the actual level of the synapse, you're talking about only really a chemical transmitter which crosses the synapse.
Okay.
Electricity per se and electromagnetic radiation per se, we are not aware actually crosses the synapse. It's purely chemical at that restricted level of the neuron. Now, within the neuron or nerve cell itself, it's basically electrical or chemical gradients, which even though we talk about chemicals at that point, every atom involved within that chemical potential of the nerve cell either has a positive charge or a negative charge, so you can basically equate that to electricity. Okay, so that's where some of the confusion comes in. Doctors will talk about electricity within the neuron. Other people will talk about chemical gradients, and it becomes very confusing because it's really one and the same.
Okay.
You're talking about sodium ions, which are positive. You're talking about potassium ions, which are positive, and then you're talking about chlorine ions, which are negative. But the end result is that you're talking about an electrical differential. If you want to talk electrical within the actual nerve cell itself, both would be right.
That is interesting. So in the general conversation, then we can assume that once the waves or the communication leaves the body, it becomes an ethereal or a subtle body, in that it becomes a radio wave or a light wave or a magnetic wave. Are they all the same waves?
But they really are. When you talk about electromagnetic radiation, so that has an electrical component, it has a magnetic component, and physicists basically equate any type of electromagnetic wave as light. As humans, we tend to think of light as purely the visible light that we can appreciate with our eyes, but that's purely a restrictive way of viewing light, because physicists view light as any part of the electromagnetic spectrum. So that includes cosmic radiation, it includes X-rays, ultraviolet light, it includes the very narrow visible light spectrum, and then it advances on to infrared, your microwaves, our radio and TV waves, and then our extremely low frequency waves, which happen to be those which our brains put out.
That is fantastic. Thank you for clarifying that. So,
it is confusing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is confusing because you are right up against the way we're conditioned in our consciousness. Light as when you turn the light on.
Yes.
And to integrate a new understanding of light in our consciousness, then we must look at the broader implications of what light actually is as an energy source.
Exactly. And so really when you're talking about electromagnetic radiation, whether it be that which our brains are putting out, or that which our cell phones are putting out, or that which the electric wires behind our walls are putting out, we're talking about radio sources which can basically go into outer space, can travel the entire universe, and they are considered timeless because we know that they're traveling at the speed of light, and hence they exist outside of time, as crazy as that sounds. It's one of what I call the three omnis of light. The three omnis are omnipresence, because light can basically be everywhere, or omnipresent. And think if we were light waves and could be everywhere in the universe at once, we would also know everything that was going on in the universe at that time. So that leads to the second omni of omniscience, which again is an attribute that we often ascribe to God, which also pertains to light. If you can be everywhere in the universe, you know everything that's going on in the universe. And the third omni is omnipotence. There are several quantum mechanical concepts that equate to omnipotence. They're very difficult to verbalize, and you almost need PowerPoint slides and whatnot to be able to visualize what exactly the physicists were talking about when they ascribe omnipotent traits to physical light, but those are the three omnis: omnipresence, omniscience, and omnipotence. And isn't it interesting that that is also how we describe God and how Christ described himself, saying, "I am the light of the world." That is how many of the Hindu gods describe themselves. Muhammad and Allah, light, again, represents how Allah is described in the Quran. And it goes on with every major religion across the planet. So I no longer feel that these references are metaphorical. I think they are indeed literal.
And I see your book, Akashic Light, Religion's Common Thread, is focused just on that for people who are very interested and intrigued by this, as I am. that is a great source to explore. The Akashic Light by T. Lee Bowman explores all of light and its references in religion. And in the ELF, then, as light, as source of light that our bodies emit, both transmitting and receiving, it is also a medium for information.
It is. And it explains so much, the fact that God is all-knowing, and when you're having a near-death experience, you see this being of light, which you often identify with God. At the time, you have all the answers to the universe. As soon as you go back to your body, those answers disappear, of course. You're talking about the cosmic consciousness being out there, which exists, receiving all the thoughts of humankind from around the planet, the thoughts of perhaps all past spirits, perhaps the thoughts of even alien beings, any light spirit, including God, the angels. I mean, it's all out there. And I think that's where Edgar Cayce got his information when he went into trances. I think that's where so many psychics get their information when they go into trances. It explains when many of us, for just totally unrecognized reasons, are in foreign locations and a question pops up, as happened with Scott Peck. This was one of the examples he gave in one of his books. He's the author of People of the Lie and The Road Less Traveled. He gives an example of he and his wife were in Singapore. They were walking down the road. His wife says, "Gee, I wonder what that building is up ahead." And for totally unknown reasons, the author says, "Oh, that's the Singapore Cricket Club." And as soon as Scott Peck said it, he said, "I regretted those words coming out of my mouth because, one, I had never been in Singapore before. Two, I had no idea what a cricket club even looked like. And three, why did I say something like this when I had no reason for saying it?" And yet, as they continued on and they rounded the corner of the building, there in the front of the building was a big brass plaque saying, "The Singapore Cricket Club."
You know, I love that.
And we all from time to time get these crazy or creative ideas, and we can't explain where they came from. We can identify with the fact that, you know, certainly this idea did not come from my brain, because, you know, I just would never have created this idea. We all have ideas like that. We wake up with them in the middle of the night, or we're in the shower and suddenly it hits us, and if we don't write it down, it's gone. You know, it's just one of those things where it's not something that we are often capable of coming up with on our own, but yet it strikes us. There is no rational explanation for it, but we know that these phenomena occur.
Yeah, and they occur with tremendous frequency. Let's play scientist then with the experience that you shared of the person who recognized the cricket club without knowing it. Can you tell us how our bodies, what part of our body figured that out? Our antennas that are located where? I mean, in this body that has this phenomenal neuronal system activating all the time, and we have the antenna going out and tapping into the ELF. Can you put that into our physical body? What, in your theory of our body, is the actual part that does that? You mentioned it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean that is such a great question, Jamil, because I don't think anyone has the answer to that. we can hypothesize that any one of our nerve cells might be capable of acting as an antenna. If we look at our spinal cord...
Every one of them.
Well, I mean, everyone has the potential.
So we have billions of antennas.
We do. I mean, let's face it.
Watch out.
Exactly. You know, the one thing that this book and the research I did for this book made me aware of is our thoughts are not private. Our thoughts are not our own. Now, when I was growing up, if anyone had told me that, and many people did, they, you know, I was told, being raised as a Christian, don't think naughty thoughts because God knows what you are thinking. And I always, you know, thought to myself, yeah, right, because I didn't believe it. You know, I didn't believe even God had the capability of knowing what I was thinking. But when you look at this type of research, the fact that we've got people like Dr. David Cohen at the University of Illinois who's been working on brain waves being emitted from our brains since the 1960s. And yet, how many of us are aware of this type of research? I certainly wasn't until just within the last few years. Now, true, his research has advanced to the point where he's been able to actually measure these extremely weak radio waves coming out of our brains because, first of all, he had to eliminate all the radio waves coming from the external environment. And that includes the Earth. It includes all of the radio frequencies that are human-made all around us, whether it be cell phones or TVs or radios. He then had to eliminate all the frequencies coming in from outer space. So he basically had to build this metal room to put his subjects in so that no external or environmental radio waves could interfere with his research. And only then was he able to measure these extremely weak radio waves.
Radio waves and electromagnetic waves are synonymous now.
They are, yes.
Okay.
Radio waves are a subset of electromagnetic waves, just as our brain waves are and just as TV waves are.
Okay.
I mean, and then you have these phenomenon, which I mentioned earlier, these Schumann resonances, which can amplify these radio waves. You know, it suddenly makes you aware that you dream. You dream all these bizarre things that you wonder, you know, where did these images come from? You have people who are labeled mentally ill who are getting all of these awful hallucinations, whether they be visual or audio. You're talking about people with obsessive compulsive disorder who are getting these evil, heinous type of intrusive thoughts, and some of the people with obsessive-compulsive disorder are some of the most righteous individuals you will ever meet.
Huh.
And it's almost like they're being selected out as test subjects to see whether they can be, you know, converted to the evil side, you know, to the evil side of the force. You really wonder, and I think the recent technology that these brain waves are out there makes you realize that there's a real possibility that these individuals are receiving real thoughts, real visions, and real audio waves, but they're just not able to filter them out. Most of us, you know, like myself now, if I get an evil thought, I just quickly dismiss it. And even that hasn't been easy. It's something I've had to work on. But you get a lot of people with obsessive compulsive disorder, with mental illness, schizophrenia in particular, and they don't have the power to do that.
Where do you, this opens up a huge conversation. Where do thoughts come from? Are you familiar? I don't want to digress too much, but I cannot not mention this. Are you familiar with the HARP technology?
I am, yes. I am.
That is a manipulator of the ionosphere, which we haven't gone into yet. With you mentioned that in your book. Can you share with us with a technology that directly imposes itself in the ionosphere, how, in science terms, would that actually be able to put information of a malevolent intent into the accessible consciousness of the human that I think might well also be part of this phenomena of the OCD sufferers and the hallucinogenics and, you know, does that make any sense to you?
It really does. Now, this HARP technology, and if I'm trying to think if HARP is, the acronym is H-A-A-R-P.
I think yes, it is.
That's what I tend to remember. It was originally started as one of the armed forces experiments so that they would be able to produce these extremely low frequencies, or ELF waves, which would be able to penetrate the oceans for submarines.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now it is, you know, the only time you can really communicate well with a submarine is for it to surface, or for it to at least extend its antenna up, you know, from the water into the air. And then it's able to receive radio waves. Now, what they found was that with ELF waves, if they're strong enough, they can actually penetrate water, and hence our armed forces would be able to communicate basically around the world, and even, you know, to our subs under the ocean depths. What happened, though, is that the antennas had to be thousands of miles long to be able to produce ELF waves, because the waves themselves are basically thousands of miles long. So what happened was that we know that certain types, in fact, most types of ELF waves are actually positive or constructive or helpful for our human bodies in general. We're able to receive these ELF waves, and they are not deleterious, whereas most other human type of waves, hence in the United States we're talking 60 cycles per second, which is the frequency of our electrical grid, or in Europe we're talking 50 cycles per second, which is the frequency of their electrical grid, we know that those frequencies are actually harmful to us as humans. Now, the explanation might be because we just didn't evolve under those type of, you know, radiation spectrums, whereas we did with ELF, because ELF just happens to be the major spectrum that our Earth emits. So we have that type of disparity. But the HARP experiments, apparently the type of energies that they're having to send in to these antennas, which to my understanding are buried underground, like I said, are thousands of miles long, the amounts of energy are just so staggering because they're so strong that even though they're in the ELF range, they're probably going to be deleterious just because of the enormous intensity, you know, of the wavelengths. So there's just so much we don't know about this HARP experimentation, whether it's, one, even going to be successful, and, two, whether it might actually be harmful, even though it's within a very compatible frequency range for us as humans. So it's just one of these mind-boggling governmental experiments that, you know, hopefully it's not going to go awry.
Yeah, and I've been studying this, and I want to just focus on what you've shared with us about the capacity of it, how it transmits information. I think if you could explain that, it would give us another concrete example of how ELF itself transmits information, period.
Right.
But also looking at our time, I wonder if we should leave the HARP conversation and move to consciousness. What part of us is actually understanding or communicating with these thoughts. If we are not our bodies, as the ELFs, you know, as identifying the ELF and the fourth, what I call the fourth dimension, the place where time and space meet and move into the timeless dimensions, where consciousness also exists. I'm getting a little distracted. Okay, come back. All right.
I think you're doing great.
Thank you. This is really interesting. Okay, so I am very interested in pulling this together in a comprehensive way. This conversation could go on for hours, and indeed it should. The HARP conversation needs to happen. I will just forward that a little to let you know that actually the antennas are now above ground, and they are actually a mile square in Alaska. So there's been substantial progress in their experimentation, and because of what you just said, it should be a matter of concern of all of us, because it does affect the most intimate part of our being. The ELF being, now we understand, we are all walking neuronal transmitter receivers of this unseen energy that's all around us.
Exactly.
And, okay, and so how we tap into that is something, is a conversation of the ages as well, and this is also where God and science meet, right?
Yeah.
So we're now at the point where we're saying, all right, so who comes into my being? What thoughts do I acknowledge? This is a life's work. This is many lifetimes' work, right?
It is.
It's now becoming not just a privy of somebody who wants to, you know, pursue a spiritual path and be a monk or whatever. It's actually becoming much more accessible and necessary for all of us as individuals to be a great deal more mindful, not an accidental word there,
yes.
Of what is going on in our inner world. What are these thoughts and where are they coming from, and which ones will I choose to engage and which ones will I choose to dismiss, and which ones will, you know, be of benefit and which ones are harmful. This is,
it's confusing, isn't it?
Oh my God, it goes, but it's exciting. This is what being human to me is. This is the multidimensional experience. As soon as we acknowledge this inner world that we are connected through all of this amazing mystery, that to me makes it a lot more interesting.
It does. The fact, my own personal belief is that I believe each and every person is an extension of God. I believe we each have souls. These souls are basically infinite spirits of light. They do not die or end at death. They continue on. We, as extensions of God, in our current lives, from time to time, for at least most average individuals, might from time to time be able to tap into this cosmic consciousness of all these other thoughts of all these other souls, both living and dead, and even including God, for that matter. Now, you know, when we're able to tap into it, for probably the average individual, is unpredictable. We have psychics who can do it on a regular basis just by going into trance. And that is great. I feel they are very gifted. We have other individuals that may not be classified as psychics, but they have other and separate gifts, and they're able to tap into various other subsets of this dimension. So each and every one of us is different. And because of that, it makes understanding what others experience so difficult. And it makes understanding our universe around us so much more difficult. So that's what makes life such a challenge, is that we are all different. We all have different experiences. Some of us are able to filter the good from the bad thoughts, and other of us are not. And so all these discrepancies continue to make life so confusing. And it's just a part of life, and I think that's what we're trying to work out as we, each and every one of us, tries to survive each and every day, knowing that some of us are just perplexed and tormented on a daily basis. Other of us have what we consider just blessed lives where everything seems to be going right, and trying to understand why some people have just these wonderful lives, others have tormented lives, why there are the deaths of innocence that are so difficult to understand. You know, life is like that. It is not clear-cut, and it leads us to ask all of these different questions. So that's what we're all working on, and many of us, probably most of us, are not going to have all the answers until we travel to that other side, and God will give us the answers at that time.
And maybe we don't need the answers. Maybe it's enough to be engaging the discovery. Maybe what we need
exactly
really is an attitude shift, and to cultivate more forgiving and compassionate and unconditionally loving ways of being with ourselves and everybody. I mean, that's another route.
I could not
might not get there for a really long time, so we might as well enjoy it while we're here. Right?
Really, could not have said it better. I mean, so many close relatives and friends believe in God because of faith alone, and that is great. I cannot do that.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I have accepted God through a really non-traditional venue, you know, by the name of science. And I am so fortunate and blessed to have been exposed to that particular venue, which has given me the answers that I need, and it has granted me comfort. So I think we all find comfort in different ways. For many of us, that's enough. For others, it is not enough, and when we have to keep on searching.
Yeah. I thank you so much. We are closing in. I would like to tell all of our listeners where to find you and information about your books. You have a profile on Google, and I'll give you the long address. You will also be able to find Lee's contact information on alchemyoflight.org. That's my blog site. Go to the Alchemy of Light broadcast page. I will have his information posted. It will also be on the bbs.com in the archives, and that will be in a couple of days. It will be on my page, Alchemy of Light, at the bbs.com website until then, so you can get this information there as well. And I'll just give it to you in case you're with pen and very excited. The address is www.google.com/profiles/T. Lee Bauman. It is spelled Bauman. And again, you can find that information at bbsradio.com, where we are all tuned in. And thank you so much for tuning in. And next week, we will welcome back Chris Holmes and Zero Point at this time slot. And following, I will return in a fortnight. Very happy to be welcoming a hopefully lively discussion about money and consciousness. I will be welcoming Anna Maria Hemingway, who is the author of a book called Practicing Conscious Living and Dying, Stories of the Eternal Continuum of Consciousness. So come on back. And that wraps us up for this visit. Would you like to offer a closing note to our listeners?
Thank you so much for having me on, and I want to add that if any of your listeners have any questions, by going to my website, there's a email link. They can email me any questions or comments they may have, and I'm always very receptive and eager to hear what your listeners have to say. So again, thank you so much.
That's great, Lee. Thank you again, and his website and information, again, can be found on alchemyoflight.org or on bbsradio.com. Go to Station 1 to the Alchemy of Light page. And hope you all have a lovely fortnight. Do take care. Bye-bye.